So we have been walking through Proverbs, looking at the various themes that we see in the book of Proverbs over this last number of weeks. And this morning, we're getting to family. And family's a big topic that Proverbs has a lot to say about, because the reality is we all have families of some shape or form. We all have parents. Many of us have kids. We have uncles and aunts. And it doesn't matter how close you are to your family still impacts you. Family is still important. What I have always been fascinated by is that even when you're not close or even know some family members, how much light they can shine on your own life. I remember going to a family reunion once, and it was my grandparents' 50th anniversary, and we had over 100 family members come, and I met all these people many of them I'd never met before. And it was amazing how many of them I met, and I was like, you make my uncle make sense. You know, family, whether it's, you know, the traits that we inherit or that we get either by genetics or by virtue, it's amazing how much our families impact us. And so Proverbs has a lot to say about families. And so we're just going to walk through just a handful of the verses that speak about our various family relationships this morning. And we're going to begin with, is this on? Oh, ah, there we go. There we go. With the core relationship in every family, that between the husband and the wife. We're going to start by looking at Proverbs 31, verses 10 and 11, where Solomon writes, "An excellent wife who can find. She is far more precious than jewels. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain." See, Proverbs 31 is the last chapter of Proverbs, and it's important to know that the entire book of Proverbs is about is Solomon telling his son the wisdom passed on from a father to a son about how to live life well. And after 30 chapters of talking about the value of wisdom and talking about how to live well, the absolute pinnacle of wisdom is finding a good wife. You see, who you marry has such a significant impact on life. And so Solomon is telling his son, and the entire chapter is devoted to talking about this virtuous woman. So Solomon is saying, the absolute best thing you can do in life, all of this wisdom that I've given you, son, leads up to finding a good wife. Now, it's important, too, to know that Proverbs 31 is a poem. And so some of this, you may read through it, and I've talked to ladies that have been really discouraged by this chapter, saying, like, there's no way I can do all that. It seems like, I mean, it's such a lofty ideal. But the whole thing is a poem, and actually each verse starts with a successive letter of the Hebrew alphabet. And so we've got to remember that it is a poem, but still it is what Solomon is saying is the pinnacle of wisdom. And so as you read through this, it's sometimes hard to think, you know, it's really hard to live up. That is quite the standard. But let me encourage you with this, is that after Solomon has gone through and he's told his son all of this wisdom, that there is only one woman in the whole Bible that is given the same title as the woman in Proverbs 31. And that woman is Ruth. And so if you ever feel that you have to have absolutely everything together, you have to have everything in order, look back at the life of Ruth. Because Ruth, when we meet her in the book that bears her name, is a foreigner, a widow, and is destitute, is literally having to go to the fields to collect what was dropped so that she could feed herself and her mother-in-law. The only thing that Ruth had in abundance was character. And so, she, having nothing of material wealth, having nothing of social status, being absolutely destitute, but full of character, when Boaz goes to the city gates and makes his intentions known to the men, because that's what they had to do when dealing with an inheritance and with a widow, when he mentions who it is, she is called the virtuous woman. Just like Proverbs 31. And so, if the pinnacle of wisdom is finding a good wife, Proverbs also has a lot to say about why you need to have a good wife. I think it's summed up well in 27:15, which says, "A continual dripping on a rainy day and a quarrelsome wife are alike. To restrain her is to restrain the wind, or to grasp oil in one's hand." Now, again, we have to remember, this is a father speaking to a son, saying, when you're looking for a wife, this is what you need to look for. And of course, we're in a culture today where it's very different than in the writing of Solomon, right? When Solomon was writing, we actually go through this whole really awkward dating stage, and we actually get to choose who we marry. It's not just mom and dad saying, there you go. But who you marry has an incredible impact on your life. And it is, for those of you who are not married, it is one of, or it is the, after deciding to follow Christ, it is the most important decision of your life. It's a decision that sometimes, you know, it's a difficult decision sometimes. Sometimes it's difficult to look back and or to take a long, honest look at who you should marry, who you should be pursuing. But anyone who has been in a bad relationship will tell you that no matter how rosy things look, you don't want to go there. When I was young and fresh out of college, I actually was engaged to be married, and with about 3 or 4 weeks to go, we called it off, or I called it off, because there was stuff that just didn't add up. And I can tell you honestly, it was one of the most difficult decisions of my life. But I also know that God, looking at what has happened since, that God saved me from an incredible amount of hurt. And what was so encouraging at that time was that I found out from a number of people, I found out about marriages in my family I didn't know about. And I still remember one family member just sent me a quick note just to tell me how proud he was of me and that he wished that he had had the guts to turn around before it was too late. You see, he had gone through what it was like to live with a dripping roof, as it turns out. And it came with incredible pain and baggage. And so, the cornerstone of our families is going to be husband and wife, who we marry. And so, it is something that we need to be so cautious of. We need to be having people speak into our lives. We need to be careful who we marry. And though this is written to a son, it goes both ways. In a culture where marriage is not arranged and you actually get to choose who you marry, it goes both ways. One pastor that I was talked to once, he said that when it comes to who you marry. He said in all his pastoral experience, he found that marriage is one of the most equitable institutions in the world. Because he said rarely has he seen anybody end up with somebody they didn't deserve. And so for good or for ill, it's like it. He said, after working with all these couples, he said, it is amazing how people found people just like themselves and found people that were as broken and as flawed as they were. And so it may seem bleak. This may sound bleak, but it's not, because the whole of Proverbs is pointing us towards how to live well. And the lesson here, the reason why marriage is the focus of this last chapter, why a good wife is the focus of this last chapter, is because if you as a young man, as a young woman, are working on your own life and you're learning and grasping the wisdom of Proverbs and the goodness of God, and you're growing in your relationship, it is incredible how, as you become more like Christ, God has a tendency to bring someone just like that into your life. And it takes hard work. And this is not, like I said, Proverbs is written to a son, but it applies equally to both men and women today. And for those of us that are married, whether we've been married for a couple of months or a few decades, Proverbs doesn't just talk about finding a good spouse. See, once you find a good spouse, though, it can take a lot of work. I don't know, some of you may have found that, you know, finding your spouse was a lot of work. Some of us had to chase harder than others. But marriage doesn't, the chase, the pursuit doesn't end with "I do." Because later in Proverbs 31, he says, chapter 31, verse 28, he says, "Her children rise up and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her. Many women have done excellently, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her the fruit of her hands and the work and her works. Praise her in the gates." See, Solomon is telling his son that not only do you have to go out and try, you know, it's such work to find a good wife. It's a lot of work to keep building her up. And husbands and wives is something that we need to continue to work at. Solomon is reminding us that we need to praise our spouse. We need to honor them. We need to encourage them. And it's something that can be hard at times, right? It's easy to fall into complacency. It's easy to just let things go. And it takes work. And it's hard. And it's something that none of us are ever perfect at, right? It's something we have to continue to work at. I can tell you, Dana will echo this, I am not perfect. I am not always good at this. Though I try. Husbands, love your wives. Encourage your wives. Single guys, single ladies, if you've got somebody in your life, watch how they talk to their parents. If there's a guy, see how he talks to and about his mom. Girls, or guys, see how a girl in your life talks to and about her dad. Because inevitably, we are remarkably like our parents. And that's the next group of Proverbs here. I just want to touch on is that was the talk about children and parents. See, children and parents, you know, we have this relationship of how do we treat our parents. And in our society today, there's far less of a, we're not in a shame and honor culture like many parts of the world. And in the, you know, the ancient world, it used to be that, you know, your family name was vitally important, that you didn't bring shame to your family name. Not so much today. It depends on kind of where you're at in life, what station in society you are. My dad is in politics for many years, and one of the things I would, you know, half jokingly say to him is, how much trouble do I need to get in to make the papers? Just because we share a last name. And sadly, it happens. There are, having a dad in politics, you kind of, if any of you have ever had family members in politics, you kind of have an affinity for each other because you share a unique burden. And we were friends with some of the other families. You know, one of the guys I went to school with, he did something that would never have made the news, but his dad was a politician, and so it was on the front page. It's rare, but it does happen. How, as children, we act does reflect on our parents. And Proverbs talks about this, because it says in 15:20, a wise son makes a glad father, but a foolish man despises his mother. Or in 20:20, if one curses his father or his mother, his lamp will be put out in utter darkness. The words being used here to despise someone in this context is talking about treating them as worthless. Saying that they're completely worthless to you. And to curse them is to treat someone as being beneath you. And so Proverbs is saying that a wise son makes a glad father, but a foolish man despises his mother. And if one curses his father or mother, his lamp will be put out in utter darkness. Now, I understand that some parents are not easy to honor. Some parents, you look back at your life and you go, what did my parents do to deserve my respect? What did my parents do to earn my honor? And sometimes we kind of mix up the idea of honoring our parents and obeying them, or validating their behavior or what they've done. That's not the case. To honor your parents is to be respectful and to honor them for what they did do for you, in spite of their flaws, in spite of their mistakes. In fact, the fifth commandment, which we all teach our children, right? Honor your father and mother, right? You got to listen to me because it's in the Ten Commandments. Okay? We say that to our kids. But for me, one of the biggest insights into that was when I realized, it was pointed out to me, that the Ten Commandments were written to adults. And so often we're like, you know, you go through them and yeah, these are all for all of us, but you know, you got to honor your parents. You say that to the kids. But when Moses brought the Ten Commandments down from Mount Sinai, he talked to the whole community. And he talked to them, to adults, about honoring your father and your mother. And I think this is, you know, this is so important, because no matter what kind of parents you had, when it talks about your lamp will be put out, you put in utter darkness, it's a metaphor for the lamp of the soul, the life force, right? What kind of a person you are. And I don't know about you, but I've found in my life that nothing extinguishes the fire inside of me faster than bitterness. And bitterness is something that is always our choice, right? We can choose to be bitter. We can choose to curse someone. And I don't think there's anybody easier to be bitter with than our parents. Bitter for, you know, for not letting us do something, or for letting us do something, for what they did or did not provide for us. I mean, I have wonderful parents. I love my parents. And they were great. They were far from perfect, but they were good parents. But they still had their shortcomings. And there are things that happened, you know, when I was a kid that you don't, as kids, we don't always understand why mom and dad do one thing or another. And then you become a parent and you're like, oh, that makes sense now. But Proverbs is telling us that if we hold that bitterness, if we hold that those curses towards our parents in our heart, you know what? It's going to just damage us. The bitterness takes root and will extinguish the life within us. And so Proverbs tells us to honor our parents. The fifth commandment is to honor our parents, because even if our parents have done us wrong, honoring them and letting go of bitterness is the only way to move forward in life. And Proverbs 23:25 tells us that, let your father and mother be glad, let you who bore you rejoice. We are, as children, to be people that bring our parents joy. No matter how you were raised, no matter what situation you grew up in, when you are a person of character, when you are living a life of wisdom and living a life well lived, your parents can rejoice. But of course, it goes the other way too, because parents and children, Proverbs has a lot to say about. And this verse, I'm sure many of us know well, to train up a child in the way he should go, and even when he is old, he will not depart from it. You see, Proverbs, as we look at Proverbs as a whole, and we've talked about this in previous messages, but Proverbs clearly lays out two paths in life. The path of wisdom and the path of folly. The good road and the bad road. The road that leads to life and the road that leads to death. And we have, as you read through Proverbs, you see that the path of wisdom is often seen as the harder road. Right? It's the road that doesn't take shortcuts. It's the road that doesn't cheat. It's the road that doesn't steal. It's the road that is patient. It's the road that takes work. And it's not the road that we're naturally inclined to take. And so when we look at a proverb like this, to train up a child in the way he should go, it's how do we train our children to go towards the path of wisdom? And it's very interesting that one of the things as you get into the scholarship of studying the Bible, and its Bible is written in Hebrew, and there's sometimes, especially with these Proverbs, there are some things that are a little bit, because they're Proverbs, because they're wisdom sayings, they can be a little ambiguous at times, or sometimes there's other languages that can help us bring clarity. And is a fascinating illustration I came across, that the verb that's translated to train up has a related word in Arabic, which is closely related language, and it's a word that refers to taking a mixture of dates and putting it in a paste and putting it on a newborn's tongue to get them to lick if they're having trouble nursing. And it's the picture of giving a child something sweet to trick them into working because they need to. And so to train up a child is to show them, perhaps to give them a glimpse of the goodness that comes from hard work, of being the example of what it looks like after you've taken the hard road, of showing them that hard work, that wise living leads to a good and nourishing life. And we have to do this because in just a few verses later, in 22:15, we're told that folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline drives it far from him. See, folly is the willful refusal to make wise choices. And because we are all sinners, because of the fall, because sin is so deeply rooted in our hearts, if anyone doesn't believe in original sin, they haven't had a child. Because the heart of the child is inclined to folly, is it not? I have a beautiful illustration of this. Was we a few years ago, Dana painted a line at the end of our driveway, and it was drilled into the children that they do not go across the line. Well, what does Eli do? We've got a picture of him standing there with his little toy on the line, looking at us, smiling. Because the heart of the child is inclined to push the boundaries. Every one of us knows that, and it drives us crazy. And that's why we have to lovingly direct and discipline our kids. Because the sinful nature is at work, and the more immature we are, and that I say immature, not young, because I've seen some in their 20s that have a harder time with this than those in elementary school. But the more immature we are, the more power the sinful nature, the more power that inclination to folly has over us. And unfortunately, one of the biggest problems that we have, at least that I have, in helping our kids go the right way is that they are incredibly like us. All right, how many of you have ever heard your words come out of your child's mouth at exactly the wrong time? Yeah, I came across this story of a mother who was preparing dinner for guests, and it was, you know, we've all had that day, you know. We all know that when company comes over, everything is like perfectly in order, right? But we all know what the hour before that looked like. And so it comes to dinner and company's there, and this little girl was asked to say the blessing, and she said to her mom, "I don't know what to say." And her mom said, "Just say what you've heard mommy say." So the youngster bows her head and says, "Dear Lord, why did Dad invite these people over?" The problem is our kids follow us. Our kids imitate us. And so often we say, if I only do the right things, if I only play the right games with them, if I only put them in the right school, get them the right friends, teach them the right things, we can all finish the sentence of, if only I can get my kids in, they'll turn out all right. Now, I believe that every person has a decision to make when it comes to faith. Our children have to decide for themselves whether they're going to follow Christ or not, whether they are going to live a life of wisdom or of folly. But as parents, it is our responsibility to point them in the right direction. It is our responsibility to show them the way. This was really driven home for me when a few years ago I went to a workshop put on by our school district when we were down on the coast, and it was about parenting in the digital age. And it was fascinating to me because parents were there wanting the checklist of just tell me I need to do this, this, and this, and my kids aren't going to get into trouble online. And yet the speaker came and she had reams of data to back this up, and I thought it was just fascinating because she said they followed this group of parents and children, and they found that they broke down into three groups. There was those, when it came to technology, who had a total prohibition. There was those on the other end of the spectrum that just said, here, you know, you will give the kids an iPad and they'll figure it out. And then there was this group in the middle that she called digital mentors. Parents that actually sat down with their kids and walked through and said, you know, I don't understand this, but let's figure it out together. Let's see what we can and cannot do. Let's, you know, talk about this, and kept the open lines of communication. And I found it incredible that here we had somebody from the school district who was telling this group of parents that, it turns out you got to have a relationship with your kids, and statistically they'll turn out better. Because they found that those who were the prohibitionists who said no technology, I'm just going to no screen time, who put up the highest and strictest boundaries, turns out those kids were the most likely to find their way around those boundaries. And those who had free rein, they tended to get in a lot more trouble earlier on before they figured things out. We are to train up our children in the way that they should go. We are to give them the example. We are to walk with them. And parenting today, and I can tell you this as a parent of young kids, that there is all sorts of stuff. My sister, she's got two boys that are teenagers. So they're just a little ways further down the road than us. And it can be a scary time to be a parent because there's so much out there. There's so much going on. The technology is moving so fast. And as someone who worked in the technology field for many years, I'm like, I understand how a lot of it works, but kids are kids. And they figure it out faster than us. Whether it be technology or any area of life, when it comes to parenting, when it comes to our kids, we have to spend the time to walk through it with them, to help them see what is good. One author that I particularly appreciate when it came to dealing with technology and the stuff on the internet that we don't want our kids to find, to run into, he said that there is no internet filter that is 100% effective. But if our kids know what's real and what's genuine, if they see parents who have a loving and healthy relationship, they can see when stuff's not right. And so we need to show our kids the path that leads to life, the path of goodness, the path of wisdom. And I believe we see this in Proverbs 14:26, that in the fear of the Lord one has strong confidence, and his children will have a refuge. Parents, grandparents, uncles, aunts, anyone that knows a child, if we have a proper fear of the Lord, if we are following God, if we have a relationship and a life that reflects Jesus, we can become a strong refuge to our kids, to our kids and the kids around us in our lives. See, the greatest legacy that we can leave for our kids is one of faith. The greatest example you can have as a parent or as an uncle or an aunt or a grandparent or an honorary uncle or aunt is a life of faith. Few things are more powerful than a life of long faithfulness. I'm sure you've heard people say, "Oh man, I wish I had a relationship like my grandparents did. Oh man, I wish that I could have a relationship like that couple." And we all know that no couple is perfect. We all have our issues. But I have, one of the most incredible things I've seen in my life is when people who have strayed at times for decades away from how they were raised come back and say, "You know what? I finally realized Mom and Dad were right. I've chased after everything. And it turns out they were right." It's like the story of the prodigal son. And I have seen this in people in my own life play out. Who come to the end of themselves and go, "Yeah, Mom and Dad have never given up. And they never gave up on me." And so, let us be that refuge for our children, the children in our lives. And finally, all of this, we started with husbands and wives, and then children and parents and children, but all of this rests on the foundation of God and us. And we have to remember that God directs us too. And that this all begins with us following Him and at times taking His discipline. As it says in Hebrews chapter 12, verses 5 and 7, And have you forgotten the exhortation that addresses you as sons? My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor be weary when reproved by him. For the Lord disciplines the ones he loves and chastises every son whom he receives. It is for discipline that you have to endure. God is treating you as sons. For what son is there whom his father does not discipline? Part of being, or the beginning of wisdom, is the fear of the Lord, as it says in Proverbs. And so, as we look at this, as we look at what Proverbs says about how we are to relate to our family, we have to remember that God sees us as sons and daughters, and that we need to submit to His discipline at times. And that can be tough. And that happens in different ways. It happens as we read His Word. As we read His Word and the Holy Spirit convicts us of what is true. It happens as we spend time in solitude with His Word and in prayer. It happens as we build relationships with other believers, with people that help us to see our blind spots. It happens as we come together as a church and as we worship Him and as we look into His Word together. God touches each of our hearts, and He helps us to see the direction that we should go. Much of the wisdom of that we find is written in the book of Proverbs, and as I've said in past weeks, if you are unsure of how to get the wisdom to live well, to live and be a person of character, I encourage you to just start by reading through Proverbs. A great exercise that I did for many years when I was a young man in my 20s. Someone had pulled me aside and encouraged me to do this, just to read a chapter of Proverbs every day, and just whatever day of the month it is. There's 31 chapters. So just read whatever day and you'll hit every chapter. Well, you only get chapter 31, you know, every other month. There's the 31st, but whatever day it is, just pick it up. Because Proverbs, every chapter of Proverbs covers a multitude of wisdom. And if you have a relationship with Christ and you want to follow Him, you have to be in His Word. And if you're seeking wisdom, ask Him and He will provide it in abundance. And so, ask Him. Look into His Word. But above all, make sure you have that relationship with Christ. Make sure that you are pursuing Him, because that is the beginning and the end of it all. And if you don't have a relationship with Him yet, I encourage you, come talk to somebody here. Talk to me. Talk to whoever brought you. Talk to someone in your life and seek Him. Let's pray. Father, we thank You for Your goodness to us. We thank You that You love us. We thank You that You love us as a father, and that You want us to live lives that are lives of wisdom, to live lives that are in tune with You and with how You created the world and how You want us to live as Your followers. So Lord, I just pray You would help each of us, Lord. Help us, Lord, to be loving and honoring and encouraging our spouses. Help us, Father, if we're not married, Lord, help us to be the people that You want us to be people of wisdom, and to just trust You for where we are at, Lord. Father, for us who are parents, help us to point our children in the right way. For those of us that are children, help us to honor our parents. And above all, Lord, help us to heed your guidance and your discipline. Pray this in Jesus' name, amen.